B-Pod Studios.
Greer's putting the ball on a play.
Boston. The greatest sports town in America. Some of the biggest moments in sports history have happened right here in the hub. It's a way of life.
And for the first time since 1918, the Boston Red Sox are champions of baseball.
Boston pride runs deep.
He scrambles away from one hit. Looks, uncorks a deep one for the end zone. Phelan is down there.
Boston has a new home for sports, 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 sports.
And McHale is guarding Worthy, who is trying to put the ball on a play, and it goes quickly in now to Magic. Back over to Worthy, and it's picked off. Caught the hand, and then he lays it off and in. It's all tied up.
History is being made once again.
I believe it's going to be called a fumble. It is.
With the launch of Boston's first FM all-sports radio station.
The quarterback's arm was going forward. It is
eight. All right. Patriots retain the ball.
And now Boston has a new home for sports.
The 1-0 delivery to Fisk. He swings. Long drive. Left field. If it stays fair, it's gone. Home run. The Red Sox win. And the series is tied. 3 games apiece.
History, 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 history is being made again.
And the Boston Celtics have done it again. Another duel.
With the launch of Boston's first FM all-sports radio station. This
Ken Walter will hold Lonnie
is the new flagship station for the New England Patriots.
Adams and Terry, 48-yard field goal attempt. Set to go. Snap ball down. Kick up. Kick is on the way. And it is good.
This is the new flagship station for the Boston Bruins. This is 98.5, the Sports Hub, Boston's new home for sports.
Not so new anymore. Still Boston's home for sports, I hope. 10 years in. Happy anniversary.
What's up, Boston?
This hour brought to you by Safety Insurance, providing comprehensive coverage for your family and small business. Ask your independent agent about safety. It is the Sports Hub's 10th anniversary today on August 13th of 2019. It's been 10 years since we launched the station. Thank you, Hardy. Thank you.
Did you see that on BCN?
We are presented commercial-free today by Aaron's, the king of snow. Buy your Aaron's snow thrower this tax-free weekend that is coming up. And, yeah.
So yeah. Buckle up. We got 4 hours
get
of fun here.
Get ready. We're not taking a commercial here for 4 hours. 4 hours of us. Okay.
I got large mouth Gatorade jugs here. I'm ready to Dwight Schrute this thing.
I went with the 5 gallon Home Depot bucket.
Oh, I bought a bleacher buddy. I had an Amazon Prime to the house yesterday. I've got that thing strapped on right now.
We should got a poop chair.
Good. It's like a Jimmy Buffett concert.
Yeah.
With the
5 gallon bucket. Yeah, with the
pool noodle just around the top.
Think of it like being up in a deer blind for the next 4 hours.
That's all it is.
Oh,
it's like we're
God.
Going hunting. All right, so we've got a lot to get to and a lot to cover from the last 10 years, both in the history of this station and, of course, in the history of Boston sports over the last 10 years. But I think we should start with this. What were you doing 10 years ago before we started this station? Oof. I heard Toucher and Rich say this morning... And by the way, they did a fabulous job on their show the last 3 hours covering the last 10 years. And we have things from their show that we will cover during our show as well. They knew 6 months in advance? Hardy, yeah. You were at WBCN. Did you know 6 months in advance of the station flip that was coming?
I was listening this morning. Touch and Rich did a fantastic show this morning. But when they said that they got, you know, brought into the office in like January or February of that year, my ears perked up. I'm like, what? Because the only inklings that we had, and there's always rumors in radio. You know, there's rumors for years about who's getting hired and who's doing what.
Oh.
But the only inkling we had was that at some point they came in, the mysterious they.
The powers
just
that be.
Guys working in the building came and scraped off WBCN from, like, the etchings on the windows and of the studio windows and replaced it with CBS radio. We're like, that's odd. But they were doing it like like all parts of the building, it seemed like. Yeah. But they were taking like station logos off the window and replacing it with this CBS radio logo. I'm like, huh. And then like in, I would say like May of that year, we got a new station vehicle. But they didn't have it, you know, you see station vehicles with logos and everything, and they're wrapped. You know, they do it with this
adhesive. Right.
They wouldn't wrap it with the BCN logo. That was about June. I'm like, oh, that's not good. But these are all, like, things I'm picking up on, not because anyone brought me into an office.
You didn't get a meeting?
No meeting
for this
guy.
They didn't tell you about how important you were to the future?
Go down the hall to to our sister station down there, Adam 12, who signed on with them a month or two ago. He was doing middays on BCN. I was the afternoon guy.
You two guys are the only guys I knew from the station.
Yeah. You didn't get a meeting either?
Yeah, 12 and I didn't know. We found out, I would say, about a month beforehand. It was like early July of 2009. And thus began like my worst summer ever. That was my worst summer ever. Like just personal family medical issues I don't want to get into, but like just bad stuff, you know. Had to put my dog down like that same summer. Just bad stuff. There's just all kinds of things going wrong. And then on top of it, and the way it was presented to us, to me anyway, was not a, all right, here's what's going to happen. You're the guy. You're the one. It was more presented to me as, well, here's what's happening and you're fired. But you have a chance to get a job at the news station, and we can get into this with the whole audition process because I think a lot of us had to do this. You have a chance to be rehired.
You had to audition?
Day one of this news station. But essentially, you're going to be fired on this day with a chance that you will be immediately rehired with the new radio station. So to me, it was not this, you know, 4 or 5 month, it's going to be okay type of thing. It was 1 month from now, your life is going to change.
Oh. Could you imagine being Fred though? Knowing Fred as you now know Fred.
Oh, well let me tell you.
To keep that under wraps and how scratchy he would be. And
well, let me tell you.
Did you hear Thomas ask him how many cigarettes he was sucking on?
I am grateful now for the way it went down, because had I known that early on, I would say there's no way. There's no way I'm going to get hired. There's no way I'm going to be able to work and do that. It's just, it's not in the cards. It's not in the cards. And I would have probably...
You would have left.
I would have left. I would have found, I would have, you know, gone after that job at Q101 in Chicago. You know, I would have gone after, you know, something that was out there at the time. But given a month's notice, it's like, okay, well, I got to give it a shot. What are we going to do? What else are we going to do? There are a finite number of jobs in this industry, especially when you stay within the market. So it's like, okay, we'll give it a shot. So in hindsight, it was better not knowing, but the only other inkling I had is that like a couple of days before the announcement, I had played golf with Gary Tanguay. He invited a couple of people out to play golf. Me, I think maybe Howie was there and Amy Brooks, just a random like, you know, we're all friends, you know, get together and play golf. And Gary said to me afterwards, like, yeah, the reason why I paid your green fee that day is I knew you were going to be out of a job. And a couple of days after that, I felt bad for you.
And I was about to fall into a windfall.
Oh, my God.
I was about to make big radio bucks.
My train was coming in and yours was leaving the station. So I took care of that $30 fee there at Whalen Country Club that
gentlemen,
day for you, Hardy.
Yeah. But that was it. That's what I was doing. I was getting ready to go on the air at BCN, and Mike pulled me in the office and told me what was going to be happening a month later.
How are you spending your days, though?
Cherry picking over WEI, talking to those guys. And, of course, Glenn took me in right away once we got popped down in Providence, crushing myself. I ripped my coffee maker. I bought a Mr. Coffee coffee maker. And I had two other things, like a notepad and something. I ripped everything that I took out of that office down in Providence and called up called Glenn immediately. He said, hey, they popped us. He goes, well, we're going to have to give it some time here. So nice enough of Glenn to bring me in, but it was like a football Friday, and you get tagged, and Pete Shepard breaking my balls. Welcome to Varsity Radio.
Yeah, welcome
now.
To the big leagues.
Yeah, what are you going to do now? And then we're chat saying it's like carrying Bledsoe's bags. You could carry these guys' bags for a while. And I don't know if I ever work here in Boston. I don't know if, you know, it's kind of a smaller market down there. And this is a big market. You got to be different up here. And I remember having that discussion. But Dale knew me, were good to me. You know, they brought me in on Fridays. And it's tough. You know what it's like paying your dues in this business. I did 5:30 at 5:30 in the morning radio down in Providence for a couple of years just because you wanted benefits. And not having a gig. I had no experience. They put me on air down here. Never gave me the seven words I couldn't say. I think I said six of them the first day. I had to apologize to the audience down here in Providence. Yeah, you offend all the Italians down there. Now people are out there waiting outside the place for you. But I remember we had we were just having our third kid. Brody was born in March of 2009. And, you know, you don't have, you know, your league benefits are running out, all that stuff. And you start paying for benefits like that. And I heard inklings of some of these people having these certain meetings to formulate what eventually would come to be the Sports Hub. And, you know, of course, the brainchild of Mark Hanna. Mark Hanna deserves a lot of credit, guys, as you know this, for putting this whole thing together. And I was on a beach in Cape Cod in the summer when the phone rang. My wife answered it. And, hey, some guy by the name of Mark Hanna's on the phone. Mark said, okay, time to talk. We're forming a Sports Hub. I'm get me in touch with your agent. You're going to be doing middays. Let's start talking money.
Do I have to accept the job first, sir?
it's one of those ones where you take the phone and you put the phone down. You're doing backflips. You don't want to act like overexcited, but you're doing backflips and that. Like, this could be great.
You had an audition first, though.
I had an audition first. And I remember going over to the WBZAM, or was it their studios?
It was an old mix studio, wasn't it? Didn't mix had moved out of that building?
I don't know where you did it. I wasn't there at the time.
I know where it is.
You and Tangway called me and kind of like we did like a little preview.
It's not Channel 4's building.
It's not Channel 4's building.
It's a building that's next to it. It has like a round front to it.
Brick building.
That was the mix building.
It was the mix building, and they had moved out of there, I believe.
Okay.
Or there was no radio station moving out of there.
Right.
And they were doing auditions in there because nobody would know what the hell was going on.
Right. There was this odd little man waiting for me outside.
Going in and out of there.
And he had a goatee and a beard, and it was a darker beard than it was now. His name was Mike Thomas, and he's a big radio guy. And he said, yeah, we're going to go in there. You know, Mike's
very, very, they were trying to keep things very quiet.
Very quiet.
And
hush, hush. And he's like waiting for you in the bushes. And he escorts me inside, and there's Tangway in there. We often do an hour. That was fun. I mean, I've worked with Gary on the Super Bowls, high school Super Bowls and stuff, and ultimately thought, you know, who knows what this can be. I was excited, though. Yeah.
Yeah, so my college roommate and my best friend from UMass worked for CBS Radio on the sales side in digital stuff, and he called me at the start of July and said, hey, I got a tip. They're flipping one of the stations to sports, and just in case you want to know that. And I was like, yeah, I want to know that. I definitely want to know that. It's funny. I was on the Cape when he called, too. We're in the same place when we got the hot tip.
Nice.
And
see, it's destiny.
Right? And so I was doing updates on EEI. I was doing the Sports Flash on EEI, and I've been doing it for over about a year, maybe a little more.
I got a lot of friends over there. People think you can't stand each other. No, that's not the case. I mean, this is radio, and I think it's a town that could have multiple sports stations.
But. So I did weekends, and I was filling in and would fill in the summertime on the big show, and I got plenty of those demo tapes, which I just said, okay, and then just sent them over to Mike Thomas. And what happened was I went and I didn't hear back right away when I sent it, and I was obviously sending it before there was any announcement or before there was any application process, before anything was known. And so I was sort of ahead of it, and then what happened was when it did get announced, then I got a lot more persistent and a lot more aggravating in trying to track down the guy who's still our boss, Mike Thomas. And then he got back in touch and was like, yeah, you know, I'm really interested in talking. You know, let's get together. I want to have you in. We're going to do an interview process. Great. Then I showed up in the lobby at the old building and lied to the receptionist and said, yeah, I'm here for a meeting with Mike Thomas. And the receptionist, who was Ben, remember Ben Hardy?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So Ben was like, oh, sure, no problem. Calls Mike Thomas in his office and said, yeah, there's this guy, Mark Bertrand, who's here to meet you. He said he's got a meeting with you. Mike Thomas on the other end of the phone was clearly like, no, I don't have a meeting with him. And then he's like, yeah, he says he doesn't. I'm like, yeah, no, he does. I'll wait. I'm good. I'll wait. I'll be right here.
Got a magazine?
Don't worry. As soon as he's ready to see me, I'll be right here. And I waited him out for like, I don't know.
When was this? Was this like August 8th-ish? Was that that late or was it earlier than that?
No, it would have been earlier than that. Probably around the first of that month. Yeah.
I think I might have seen you in the waiting room when I was in there.
So
I mean, now I remember you had glasses back then.
Yeah, I did.
Were you wearing a suit, full suit?
No, I don't think so.
Business link.
No, I definitely would. No.
Powder blue tux.
No, I definitely didn't do that. And so I waited him out in the lobby, and he came out like probably 45 minutes or an hour later and was like, all right, come in. And so I interviewed on the spot, and then like an hour later, he's like, all right, I'll offer you a job. Want to come to work here? And I was like, I don't know. You know, over here, I'm doing this CEI thing. I don't know if you guys are going to be any good. Right. Is this going to work? You know, and then I was like, yeah, no, I'll come. I'll do it.
So you had tape, though, for him to listen to.
Yeah, here's 100 updates if you want them. I've been doing it, you know, at EEI. So I didn't have to do any auditions or anything. He offered me a job.
So they didn't have any tape of me, so I had to, like, put together, like, you know, fake sports shows, just like monologuing, and then go do some fake segments. And I auditioned with Dan Roach. He and I, you know, did a fake show. And...
This is what we should be playing.
That must have been
this is what we should be playing.
Can I tell you this, though?
Is Thomas still having
it? Can I tell you that people that I worked with at, you know, at Metro, which is where the updates came from, and people there and friends and family and people that had listened to sports radio every day of their life thought I was a moron. They're like, what?
Oh, for leaving EEI to go there.
Dude, you're 24 and you already are on doing, it's weekends and it's fill-ins, but you're on the air on WEEI and you're going to give that up to go to these bums? Like, they're just another startup that's going to get crushed like a bug. Haven't you seen this movie before? Haven't you seen this play out before?
Yeah.
They're going to get stomped like everybody else that's tried. You know, Zoe in Providence, ESPN 850, or whatever it was.
No signal.
No, 890.
I got offered a gig.
Zoe 1510. You've seen this before. They're going to end up just like the rest of them. I was like, people are like, what are you doing? This is a bad move for you, kid. That's it. Kiss that radio career goodbye, dummy.
I got offered a gig.
It was a good gamble.
850. I got offered a gig at 850, and I just couldn't hear the 890, whatever that was. 890.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
But we killed 850.
Yeah, when we went FM. Yeah. FM killed 850. Probably. Yeah.
But I did two auditions. I did one with Roach and one with Troop. And the one with Troop, let me tell you something. The fact that Troop was willing to do that gig and do it with me, and we were the first weekend show on the Sports Hub 2 days after we signed on. I mean, it was 10 years ago today, but two more days from now would have been the 15th, and that's Saturday morning, 8 a.m., Hardy and Troop. It was the first weekend show on the Sports Hub, and we kept that thing going for years and years. So,
Jim, were you at ESPN Radio when we started?
I was at ESPN Radio, but I had been doing the Patriots games for 3 years. Seasons of Patriots games for BCN.
So I had
time.
Yeah, I already had
So I was
familiarity with the building because I was doing the pre and post. So we would do the pre and post from in studio. And you guys used to have that couch in there with the Monster Energy drink with the lava lamp, and there was other candles in there. There's stuff from Oedipus still left over. And we're like, look at these freaks, man. These people are like druggies, man.
Rock and roll in it. They're wild.
Oh, my God. Who was the guy? Bradley J used to come in after Patriots post game. And he'd be getting his music ready. We're like, this is crazy, the Motley Crue looking guy
used to come in too all the time.
Who was that guy?
Yeah.
I forget his name.
When we started, the Patriots had three Super Bowl titles to their name. And they were in the middle of a Super Bowl drought at that time.
Yeah.
And so the start of the station, there were these years where the Patriots were sort of struggling to get back to that point of winning another Super Bowl. And they got back there and they lost. And they finally broke through in Super Bowl 49. When they beat the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the many great moments we've had along the way when they won that Super Bowl in Super Bowl 49. But that year was not without drama and not without just an incredible buildup and run and everything that went with it. So that's what we're covering here to start our look back at the last
Super
10
Bowl
years.
49. year.
The entire year and everything that came with it. And this is not the Super Bowl itself, but the run up to it of that year, that season for the Patriots in 2014 before they got to the Super Bowl against the Seahawks.
First Revis Island, now Browner Boulevard. The New England Patriots have agreed to terms with cornerback Brandon Browner.
With the 67th pick, your New England and my New England Patriots select Jimmy Garoppolo.
Snap to Garoppolo, drops back, he looks right, he steps up, he fires to the back of the end zone for LaFell. Touchdown!
Tell you what, we're only halfway through the second quarter of preseason game number two, but I think the New England Patriots have found their backup quarterback.
It never matters what I think, it's always what Bill thinks.
The Patriots have agreed to parameters of a trade to send Pro Bowl guard Logan Mankins to the Bucks for a pick and tight end Tim Wright.
I had a lot of fun there. I have nothing bad to say about New England. I love that place.
Miami wins it again by outscoring the Patriots in the second half, 23-0. Final seconds, finally, a lapse at Arrowhead.
We saw a weak team, the New England Patriots. Let's face it, they're not good anymore.
Bill Belichick with Andy Gresh and Scott Zolak.
I've never really felt like you have a total handle on your team until you get into somewhere near midseason.
Tom throws down the middle for Gronk at the five. Out of a tackle, into the end zone.
And Brady is fired up.
Tom pops, he throws down the middle for Gronkowski. Salah makes the catch, bringing it in with his left hand. Edelman leaps to make the grab, comes down with a stiff arm. Edelman to the end zone.
Playmaker, make the play. Woo!
To the knee one last time. The Patriots know they'll have their first weekend in January off. They get the bye. Throws to the left side for LaFell. Touchdown, Patriots! And New England finally has the lead. The ball's intercepted by Daron Harmon. Harmon makes the pick, and it just clicked. A trip to the AFC Championship.
LeGarrette blasts it straight ahead. Touchdown, Patriots!
Nobody wants to go home. You want to sit traffic all night long as you get ready for the Super Bowl.
Right now we're up, baby.
I only have one thing to say. We're on to Seattle.
That was the entire year.
Wow.
This hour of our 10th anniversary is brought to you by Safety Insurance, providing comprehensive coverage for your family and small business. Ask your independent agent about safety. Yeah, that was the build up to the Super Bowl. But if you're going back to that year, you can't forget about week four. Week four was such an important part of that year for that team. Mm. And it was obviously their worst loss of the year, losing at Kansas City in week four. 41-14.
Felt like it was the end. It really did. I remember sitting there and talking to Bob, and you know, that's the first Super Bowl we called that year against Seattle. And we're sitting on those buses. It's late. We're leaving Arrowhead, and I'm like, it's going to be an awful year. It's going to be an awful, awful year.
Trent Dilfer and Steve Young thought so.
Well, who didn't?
The biggest story would seem is how much the Patriots have left Tom Brady naked. Listen, when you're weak, when you're the weakest kid and you go into the bully's house, you get the snot beat out of you. We saw a weak team, the New England Patriots. Let's face it, they're not good anymore. They're weak, and they came into a great atmosphere with a team that feels like they're in do-or-die situation and got after the weaker opponent.
How is it possible?
Call what it is.
How is it possible with all these draft picks and all this guru stuff we hear coming out and all the personnel, you know, expertise from the Patriots and how great they've been for so long. How have they not been able to support Tom Brady in his career the last 5 years, especially this year, with enough personnel to go attack the Super Bowl? How have they fallen so far? Tom gets either no help at the behind the line of scrimmage or gets no help down the field, because you saw the tape, nobody's open.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the end, if anyone wants to go after Tom Brady, come through me, because I guarantee you this guy is still capable of taking anyone that's really any good to the Super Bowl. Back to Logan Mankins.
Yeah.
Think about what that says. You've got a young roster. You let go of your best linemen. You know your linemen are going to be in and out. You don't have a deep threat. All your speed is young players that haven't played. They've asked Tom to do this for the last 4 or 5 years, and he has done spectacularly. He's done the most with less than anyone in the league.
Yeah.
And this year, it's finally too much.
What's changed?
Like, what was wrong?
We've had those feelings here.
Steve Young
here.
Sounded so right there.
But Steve Young got kicked to the
curb.
He
makes a lot of sense.
And he got wrapped up with Dilfer in that. Like, those guys are idiots. They don't know what they're talking about. But Steve Young said he's not dead yet. They just got to figure it out.
Steve Young said the team didn't do enough to put around Brady. And at the time, they were working on a 10-year drought.
He was right then. Dilfer was more wrong.
Do you know what I get crushed for saying around this time?
What's that?
The window close.
Yeah. Oh, you guys used to have that
sound.
Window
close.
We used to get so angry. You guys played that sound.
They're working on a 10-year drought, and I thought they're never going to put enough around this
guy. Jim, remember the window sounder Jimmy would always play?
Oh, my God. They're going to waste the end of Brady's career. I did. I felt that way, and I don't regret saying it, by the way.
Well, that was the Brady in decline year, right?
Right.
Yeah. I didn't say Brady was in decline.
2-6 show.
No, hold on. You can put that on Felger and Mass.
He was window boy.
I was talking about the team and what was around him. I'm with Steve Young. Lockstep with Young, by the way. Don't put me in the Brady sucks camp. Don't do that to me. Don't do that to me. I felt that way. I legitimately felt concerned that they were not going to do enough to make themselves a contender again. That they were on the 10-year drought, that they were going to keep getting close and not do enough to do it and get over the top. And clearly, that's not the case. They won it that year. They've won it twice more. They've done enough. They had enough. But that was a train wreck. And they started that season 2-2, and they had that Raiders game that was here before that Kansas City game.
That's right.
I don't know if anyone remembers that Raiders game.
I do.
But they maybe should have lost that game, too. They were lucky to win that game at home. They could have easily have been 1-3 at the time.
Lucky it was the Raiders.
They're lucky it was the Raiders because they played terrible in that game, too, the week before. And they did not look like a very good football team, which is a great part of their story.
Was Kerry
in 2014.
Who's the quarterback?
And after that game, Bert Breer, Belichick, well, on to Cincinnati, those two.
Coach, your team has been so successful for so long. How difficult is it to react to the adversity of Monday night and get back on track so quickly? Because from a condition standpoint, this team, this organization hasn't had these sort of issues in the past.
But we're on to Cincinnati.
So do you think, you mentioned Tom's age at the draft.
We're on to Cincinnati.
Do you think having a 37-year-old?
We're on to Cincinnati. It's nothing about the past, nothing about the future. It's right now we're preparing for Cincinnati.
Okay, do you feel like the talent you have here is good?
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
What is your response,
I'm just asking, do you think you've done enough to help Tom Brady?
We're getting ready for Cincinnati. That's what we're doing.
So as you get ready for Cincinnati, does Tom Brady have the talent and protection around him to be on to Cincinnati and handle that?
We're going to game plan and do the best we can to be ready to go Sunday night, same as we always do. Nothing's changed.
That'll live on forever.
What a week.
What a week.
It was Giardi asking him about Garoppolo, right? What a week. Think about making a quarterback change, Coach.
Yeah.
Reevaluating the quarterback position.
I don't think we're going to do that.
Yeah. Least of our problems.
I don't think we're going to do that. They lost twice more that season after the Kansas City game. They lost that game at Green Bay. Yeah, that game.
Real quick here, too.
What?
Going back to some of the calls there, like that Garoppolo little highlight, it was in a preseason. As we sit here, we kind of blend what we're doing now with Stidham. Like, I knew then you had your backup. I didn't know that yet with Stidham. That's your difference. I told Felger this. I went on with Felger. Like, yeah, the ball's coming out a little different. I said, he's no Jimmy. But you knew then. I knew then Jimmy had something. Stidham's good. We'll see if he's Jimmy. He's not Jimmy yet. But we knew then.
You've got the loss of Green Bay, which was a good game.
It was a really good game.
Really good game.
That was one of the most fun games I've had calling in a loss. Really.
They didn't have all their equipment guys on that trip, as we learned in the Wells report. They also dropped one at the end of the year at Buffalo, or at home against Buffalo. But that didn't matter. The end of the year. Week 17. Didn't matter. Useless.
That was gift wrapped.
Yeah. Didn't matter. And so then it came down to the playoffs. And they had to break the glass. In that one. Break glass if needed. They needed to break out all the stops against Baltimore. They needed to throw everything at Baltimore to be able to beat Baltimore at home in the divisional round.
Before we get to this next clip, we got to talk about how hard Hardy worked this whole season working on these Patriots things.
This is when he was doing the MC Zosi raps
right
every week. You were doing these every week, right?
And I could not pronounce Michael Aomanawanui. I could not pronounce his name until Hardy did his little jingle at Christmas time.
Oh, that's right. That was the Christmas jingle.
Well, but yeah,
the MC Zosi raps were, I don't even know how they started, but I must
have. They started in that Kansas City game. He Zosi had rhymed a few times and we kind of played it back and had fun with it. And then you got the idea to start do these every week.
So creativity every week.
Well, first the rap and then more on throwing the kitchen sink at the Ravens.
Hey, Anybody doubt Joe Flacco right now? Anybody? It's amazing. We're down 14-0.
Patriots have no idea what they're in for. None of us do. But none of us did.
Left foot forward. Tom drops back. Brady's going to run.
Get on his back. It's like a three-point shooter.
You got to shoot to get hot.
Brady.
Let's go. Tempo. Quick.
So let me tell you, motherfuckers, who you f***ing with.
Amendola along with Grant. Edelman motions out club. Quick throw for Julian. Setting up a screen. He's going to look to throw downfield. Amendola wide open.
Oh, yes, indeed. It's fun time. Fun time.
I remember when I had my first beer.
Hey, this is what makes us different. It really does. This is what separates us from other stations. Mike Thomas talked about this on Toucher and Rich. Rich's production value. Hardy's versatility amongst all the shows here. And it's just, he's, I don't want to say you're indispensable, but you're indispensable.
Oh, well.
You really are.
That whole season, though, my God.
How much work did you put into those?
Way
How many
much.
Hours did you spend on that?
Way too
he
much.
He enjoyed it. He likes the Beastie Boys. He can sit there in a little studio.
I mean, the final result is incredible. I'm not going to lie.
Hardy would I'd be producing the games in the studio here, and Hardy would send me a text in the middle of the third quarter. Hey, I need that from Sosi right now. Oh, it's going to rhyme with this.
She's like, what?
I would roll on the entire games at home and then just like make note of when one of them would finish a phrase with a word and then like have this little list of words like 40, McCourty. And, you know, I'd have all these lines, you know, drawn back and forth. At,
40 McCourty.
Yeah, it looked Shorty. like something from A Beautiful Mind. It all made sense to me, but, you know, there were patterns. You had to identify patterns within the chaos and then go back and
passing attack somehow, on his back.
Yes. Somehow make right. it all run. Yes.
So in that game against the Ravens, 4.5 minutes to go in the third quarter, Patriots trailing by a touchdown, 28-21 was the situation. The Patriots needed to go to an emergency play. They needed to break the glass, as I like to say. And it was Julian Edelman with a pass, the double pass. It was a pass from Brady behind the line of scrimmage to Edelman. Edelman throws a deep pass down the sideline to Danny Amendola for a touchdown.
Real quick here, too.
And the Patriots.
It's the only time I felt our booth shake.
The stadium shook.
Shook.
I was in the press box at the stadium when it happened, and the floor was, you couldn't just feel it. You could see it. The entire building was shaking. It was visible.
No other time.
You knew.
No other
you
time
could
it shook
see
like
it
that.
Moving.
Yeah.
Never have seen that.
2-14 deficit.
Hadn't seen it to that point. Haven't seen it since.
They were down 14-0. They were down 28-14. They're coming back. That place shook, and it was unbelievable.
So here is the Do Your Job special where the Patriots talk about that play and talk about how they nearly used the play in what was their worst loss of the year, the Kansas City game, and, well, how they didn't, and how they were able to use it in the Baltimore game with their season on the line.
You know, we're down by 7, right? And Josh and I just looked at each other, and it came out of our mouth at the same time, like, let's go to the double pass.
I don't need any lead time for the double pass, do I? I mean, I don't have to tell you it's coming, okay.
Now Edelman motions out to the left. Quick throw for Julian, setting up a screen. He's going to look to throw downfield. Amendola wide open. Makes it
We went away from letting anybody other than Tom throw the ball for quite a while. Because we had another time where we let somebody throw the ball in New York, and it ended up in an interception. And I can remember the staff meeting that we had after that game. Never again, you know, with Tom Brady as our quarterback, will we need to have somebody else throw the ball.
Not necessarily.
It was early in training camp, and, you know, I talked to Josh, and we need to get some just misdirection plays in, plays that are a little bit different. And I said, like, what do you think about the double pass? You know, Edelman can throw, and he gave me that look like, you're the one who said nobody other than Brady is going to throw the ball for us. I said, yeah, it's been a decade. Maybe let's give Edelman a chance. Of course, any time that Edelman hit it, then he would come into the meeting after practice and you know, have ice on his shoulder like a quarterback would. You know, coach got to take care of my arm.
It was actually run in the Kansas City game, and we had a second option on the double pass that if we didn't get the defensive look, that we would opt out of the double pass and that we would go to our slant route at the bottom to Brandon LaFell. You can see up top Danny Amendola telling him to stop, to not show the double pass. We don't run the double pass. You can't tell we're doing it at the bottom. And Brandon LaFell, ironically, scores on this play. In hindsight, obviously, that was going to be critical to our season, because if we don't have the players execute the part of not giving away the double pass, then we don't have this play available for us in the biggest game of the year when we needed it versus Baltimore.
Glad they didn't blow it in Kansas City.
Unbelievable.
Glad they didn't use that one up. They needed it. They needed everything. They needed everything. It got them to the Super Bowl. It really got them to the next game, which was the AFC title game at home against an overmatched opponent, the Indianapolis Colts. It was wet. It was sort of cold that night. I think you remember the night, right?
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, that was the night that Deflategate happened, as it came to be known. Yeah, that was that game where the balls were allegedly underinflated. Someone let some air out, allegedly.
Mike Kinsel.
We've never played back the first couple of minutes of Toucher and Rich, their reaction at the time, Gresh and Zoe, or Felger and Maz, the initial reaction on the station to the reports.
Well, there was never any time. It went on, and there was new stuff seemingly like every day for weeks. And then there were, you know, developments with the reports and the responses to the reports. So we never had time really to go back and like.
But it was quick. Bob Kravitz had that report the night of the game.
And it was weird, man.
And
because.
About 11 of 12 by 2 pounds or more that stayed up for a year and a half. You mean that report?
I had the.
Yeah, that tweet. The night of the AFC Championship game, it was out.
I had a sit down where I had to mediate a conversation between Roger Goodell and Sean McManus, who's the head of CBS at the time, and I think it was Les Moonves too, at Robert's house the night before, which was the AFC Championship party. So at that time, based on all the information that you had, based on emails that Goodell knew at that time.
So here is the reaction from both this station and from abroad, national media, ESPN. Also, you'll hear Bob Kravitz and his TV report on this. Have a listen.
Play being held up right now in the rain. Phil Simms and Jim Nantz conversing over on CBS next door in the booth. To our left, Brady and company waiting for Walt Anderson and the officials.
Don't understand really
well. Allow play to proceed.
And we just started
some confusion apparently over whether there was a TV timeout.
How can you have a TV timeout to start the second half after a kick?
But play is being held up by the officials on the field. CBS is staying with it.
We should.
And now the ball placed down on the far hash, right hash of the 13. Patriots again to break from the huddle.
More breaking news stemming from last night's AFC title game. A new development overnight following last night's Colts-Patriots game.
Now the Patriots might have another cheating scandal on their hands. Dave Calabro and Bob Kravitz have the exclusive report this morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Dave Calabro with Bob Kravitz. We're back at the hotel in the middle of the night getting some breaking news, Bob. What have you learned?
A league source tells me that the NFL is investigating the New England Patriots for possibly deflating the footballs in the AFC Championship game. Nobody is beginning to suggest that that's the reason that the Colts lost, but that is an issue that they're going to take a look at.
Yeah, a lot of people say, well, who cares? The Colts got blown out. Why does this matter at this point?
Well, I mean, it's not the reason they lost, but the reason it's important is that the Colts are a passing team and the Patriots like to run the ball. And a deflated football is very, very difficult to throw.
This stupid deflating football thing, I don't care if they took all the air out of everything. I mean, can you just leave the team alone for 5 seconds. I mean, they dominated that game. No one's arguing that it was that because that was that. But deflating the footballs? Okay, so what's the penalty for deflating the football?
Losing draft picks. It's a big deal.
No, there's losing draft picks, and there's losing seventh round draft picks. Like, is it a big deal that Woody Johnson might be called out for tampering? The history of losing picks for that is like sixth or seventh round picks. No, I would argue that that's not a big deal. I mean, what's the percentage of seventh rounders having an effect?
But isn't that with the deflating of balls, isn't this so easy just to end it? The NFL can just speak up and say, according to reports, that they weighed one of the balls
and
at the beginning of the half.
According to Bob Kravitz, there should be some kind of statement today.
Because all you need to do, okay, put it this way. If everything was fine, all the NFL has to say is we weighed the ball and everything was fine. Then it's done and it's over with. People can shut up about it. But if for some reason they find that it wasn't the right weight, then I guess you do have to kind of go back and you have to find out whether the circumstance was malicious, whether there's any tape or any cameras that are on the person who is the keeper of the balls on the sidelines. I mean, there's a lot of restrictions that try to prevent this from happening. The referees have these balls, which, by the way, we've learned 1,000 times this morning that each team has their own. It's like 12 of each, but the refs open them up.
So let's just get down to it here and ask the quarterback. If the football's got a little less air in it, is it easier to grip or does it make it tougher to spin it and get the spiral that you want?
Makes it tougher to spin it. We have some of the most non-athletic people here in this building, but sometimes during breaks and we have a crazy morning zoo show that they've taken me outside and I've tried to injure the phone screener. And, he doesn't catch the ball well, but we used to have a football. And nice football, but didn't have much air in it. And you could it was kind of squishy a little bit. You could almost squeeze it too hard. Can't throw a spiral. Can't throw a spiral with a deflated ball. That ball needs, I said, pump this sucker up, and then we'll tee this thing up, and then I'll light him up. And that's what we did. And we intended to injure Adolfo that way. here's what's funny is that... okay, so they got the right ball in there then. If it was deflated, Brady went, 8 of 8 to start the second half?
Right, 8 of 8.
And he had issues throwing the ball in the first half and underthrew Gronkowski, where he didn't put it up high for him to go get it. I mean, what are you trying here? I mean, how much sour grapes is this? Do you take it as sour grapes? It's almost worse than what was last week.
You know, why can't they be a great team? Why can't it be that it didn't affect the outcome and they were still dinking around with the balls? Is that possible?
Sure, it's possible. Absolutely.
All right. Beetle, has anything come out on that? Is there any, I'm eager to hear Goodell's investigation. A little question and answer with you guys. Deflating the balls. Does that sound like something they would do?
Of course. Absolutely. It sounds like something they would do.
Beetle, does that sound like something they would do?
Sure. I think any team would do that.
Do you think it affected the outcome of the game?
Not even close.
No.
Do you think they're capable of doing something like that? Does it sound like something they would do?
Is that even debatable?
I don't know. Question number three. Do you have confidence that the league, if the Patriots were doing something wrong, that Roger Goodell will get to the bottom of it or want to get to the bottom of it?
No. I have no confidence in the league. No. I told you a long time ago, Goodell's credibility is gone. See you later.
Zero. Shot. Kaput.
Yep.
When Goodell was on the rocks, who was his staunchest supporter?
Robert Kraft.
Beetle, your confidence in Goodell getting to the bottom of it?
None. I have no confidence in the guy whatsoever.
Okay.
I just think it's laughable that there is even going to be an investigation.
Why?
A little bit of air being let out of the football? Really?
Well, so this is what I'm curious about. And I don't think we're going to get the answer of to it because I think Goodell's going to take care of Kraft no matter what. But I'm curious what Indianapolis has. I'm curious if the Colts have any physical evidence. You know, did they see a ball boy on the Patriots side deflating the balls?
On our broadcast tonight, full denial from Patriots quarterback Tom Brady and from his coach as a football inflation scandal remains bigger than the upcoming Super Bowl, as the question remains who or what was responsible.
Tonight, caught in a pressure cooker. Is Tom Brady a cheater? Quarterback Tom Brady responds to reports that the Patriots used deflated footballs in the AFC Championship game.
Those balls were deflated. Somebody had to do it. And I don't believe there's an equipment manager in the NFL that would, on his own initiative, deflate a ball without the starting quarterback's approval. I just, I just didn't believe what Tom Brady had to say.
You seem pretty emotional about this.
Well, you know, it's disappointing.
The game between the Seahawks and the Patriots will be played 10 days from now, and today was consumed by allegations that the Patriots had an edge in getting there.
The integrity of the most popular sport in America is being called into question just days before its biggest game. Did the New England Patriots cheat their way into the Super Bowl?
If you're a cheater, and you're a multiple-time cheater, I would say to the New England Patriots, you know what we're going to do if this was found to be true, like today, tomorrow, next 72 hours, next 3 years, you know what? You're forfeiting your spot in the Super Bowl. We're vacating it. Get out. You're a cheater. You're a lying franchise. If true,
yeah.
If you can prove it, get out.
That's such a bad take.
What a putz.
Oh, God.
Two of the biggest.
Man.
I mean, obviously, Patriots got nailed. They did what they had to do.
5 years and later, we know that take what, still blows.
We know what the flake is, but the two biggest morons that come out of that is Wilbon and Mark Brunell crying on the set of ESPN.
Let's assume they did it and they were caught red-handed and they videotaped the entire thing. Even if you had that take, then you'd still have a bad take. Even if there was definitive, undeniable, undisputable, like, fact that it had happened. What?
You're forfeiting your spot in the Super Bowl. We're vacating it.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, put the Colts in.
Get out of here. Get the hell out of here.
Well, that score, Ben.
That's such a bad take. Bad take. After that all went down, that week was wild. The whole build-up to the Super Bowl was crazy. It was dominated by this, by the underinflated footballs. And Belichick had a Monday conference call.
Right.
It was his first public comments since the game, obviously, and since his post-game press conference.
Just want to start by leading off with the news on the NFL saying it's looking into the footballs being used in the game, with one Indianapolis report suggesting that perhaps the Patriots intentionally deflated the footballs, or maybe a football in the game, and I was curious what your response is to that.
We'll cooperate fully with whatever whatever the league wants us to, whatever questions they ask us, whatever they want us to do.
Did you know, as the game was going on last night, that there was potentially an issue? Was any concern brought to you at the time of the game?
No, I didn't know anything about it until this morning.
Did this amuse you, Bill, this topic, by any chance?
Excuse me?
Oh. I'm just curious what you think of the topic. The idea that we're talking about deflated footballs. I'm to be honest, I'm just trying to get my hands around it, too. I'm just curious what you think of the topic and if that could potentially be an advantage for a team.
Look, you're asking the questions. I'm just trying to answer them.
Do I amuse you? Does this amuse you?
What am I, a clown?
This whole thing is funny, right, Bill?
What? Reese is just trying to wrap
up. A couple of Joe Pesci references there, because then you had the Mona Lisa Vito reference in his press conference later in the week, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist. I'm not an expert in footballs. I'm not an expert in football measurements. I'm just telling you what I know. Would not say that I'm Mona Lisa Vito of the football world, as she was in the car expertise area.
Can you answer the question?
No, it is a trick question.
Why is it a trick question?
Because Chevy didn't make a 327 in 55. The 327 didn't come out till 62. And it wasn't offered in the Bel Air with a four-barrel carb till 64. However, in 1964, the correct ignition timing would be 4 degrees before top dead center.
I mean, I've seen the movie, 50 times, so.
Betty.
She was the best. That's all-time great expert witness. I wasn't trying to be that.
That's Bill Belichick and Do Your Job. Again,
brilliant.
Credit obsessed to Mona Lisa Vito in My Cousin Vinny.
Obsessed with Marissa Tomei like George Costanza.
This hour brought to you by Safety Insurance, providing comprehensive coverage for your family and small business. Ask your independent agent about safety. The press conferences, that press conference, the Mona Lisa Vito one, was out of nowhere. It was like 4 o'clock on a Saturday.
Floored.
Bill called it at a last minute. The media had heard rumblings that he might call a press conference, and he did. It was a last minute thing, and he did it out of the blue. Brady, on the other hand, held his press conference, and I don't think it went well. It was not perceived well when it happened.
It's one of Brady's
I have no knowledge of anything. I have no knowledge of any wrongdoing of any.
Nobody did anything wrong.
Yeah, I'm very comfortable saying that. I'm very comfortable saying that nobody did it. As far as I know, I don't know everything. I also understand that I was in a locker room preparing for a game for 5 hours. I don't know what happened over the course of the process with the footballs. I was preparing for my own job and doing what I needed to do.
He did not come off good in that press conference. It was his worst press conference he had ever done.
There's times where Stacey, you know, like, two more questions, that's it, we're gone.
They tried to cut it short.
He was out there for a half an hour.
And he stayed, yep. I'm like, get off the podium.
Get out. Get off the stage.
We follow the rules.
Stop letting them ask questions.
We follow the rules. We do everything by the book. I don't know what this is.
Has there ever been a time where he seemed less emphatic about something? Like, he is deliberate, you know, confident. I don't think I did.
Bill was emphatic. Brady was not. Robert Kraft, when he hit the ground in Phoenix for Super Bowl 49, emphatic.
I want to make it clear that I believe unconditionally that the New England Patriots have done nothing inappropriate in this process or in violation of NFL rules. If the Wells investigation is not able to definitively determine that our organization tampered with the ear pressure in the footballs, I would expect and hope that the league would apologize to our entire team, and in particular, Coach Belichick and Tom Brady, for what they have had to endure this past week.
Emphatic. That's what it is. That's what that was. And the Patriots were able to put all of this behind them, play the Super Bowl against the Seahawks, a hard-hitting, hard-fought game. What a Super Bowl. That was a great game.
That was a great Super
great
Bowl.
Game.
And
great
now that
game.
They've won two more, I don't know that it's remembered as vividly as maybe it would have been otherwise, but that was a hell of a game.
I still remember we did our roundtable for the three games to glory after the comeback against Atlanta. And everybody thinks that's the greatest one because you're down. Nobody ever comes back from 25 down. I said, oh, no, I digress. I said, Super Bowl 49 was a better Super Bowl. That's number one to me.
Those teams beat the bag out of each other.
You were down 10.
They physically beat the crap out of each other.
You were down
10
to the best defense in the league in the fourth quarter, and it was all on your quarterback. And he was getting battered, and he hung in there, and they made plays. Edelman getting knocked out, staying in the game. Drop your nuts. Shaughnessy pissed off. Trenny pissed off. Deal with it. You know what you do?
I remember that.
You drop your nuts, and you win Super Bowls, and you stand on top of Duck Boat. God forbid you get taken out of a game for 10 minutes.
That was one of your first shows together.
It's like a second show.
That pissed me off more than anything.
Here it is. How they did it. They won the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 49.
Welcome to University of Phoenix Stadium, where the grandest stage in American sport is set for Super Bowl 49 between the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. And Super Bowl 49 is underway with a kick sailing left to right. Tom throws to the end zone, left side, the ball's intercepted, picked off by Lane.
I cannot tell you, however you felt in Indianapolis prior to that half, this one was worse.
A lot of mental toughness. Our team's had it all year, and we never doubted each other.
Brady, quick throw, underneath, touchdown Patriots! He finds LaFell on the flat! And New England strikes first in Super Bowl 49! Second down snap to Brady, drops back. He lobs it to the right side for Gronkowski. Has a step, has a touchdown! Patriots!
And the spike!
Seattle with 6 seconds to go, the ball down on the 10. A shotgun snap and a throw to the left side. Leaping grab by Matthews, brings it down, touchdown Seattle. Made the catch in front of Logan Ryan.
Wow. Gutsy call by Pete Carroll.
A play fake by Russell Wilson. Stands it, lobs the throw deep down the left side. That ball is going to be caught! Twisting catch again by Matthews.
You're looking at Matthews as the MVP of this football game right now. You got to get Kyle Arrington off.
Shotgun snap to Brady. Pass is going to be intercepted.
Force that one to Gronkowski. Well, you got to be careful here, man. This is where that game can turn.
Russell Wilson sets up in the end zone. Lobs one. Wide open receiver falling for a touchdown for Seattle.
We saw Richard Sherman going 24-24. Here's what he was saying. Drell Revis, 24. Just got beat.
Bill Belichick talking to Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady.
That's the first time I've ever
seen him go over and get on a knee and talk to his quarterback and his offensive coordinator.
Shotgun snap to Tom. Play fake to punt. Shuffles left. Fires back of the end zone. Touchdown New England! Danny Amendola!
He got life.
Tom short drop. Looks left. Throws for Edelman! Touchdown Patriots! They're back in the lead in Super Bowl 49!
2:02 left when things seem dire. What do you do in life? You go right to people that you can depend on. And it's been all year long. Number 12, number 11.
When Trent Dilfer say that the Patriots are the worst team, they don't can't win, you know, it's unbelievable to hear that man say that. It's embarrassing for him.
Wilson at a 1st and 10, fires down the right side. He's got Kirsch, and the ball is knocked incomplete. Good play again by Malcolm Butler. Oh. Did Kirsch catch it? He caught it on the carry.
Like shades of David Tyree.
It was surreal that even happened. I was like, man, they got like about a minute left and they just made like a 50-yard bomb.
Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Wilson, quick throw. And it's
good.
Intercepted to Malcolm Butler. Butler has it at the one. Malcolm Butler stepped in front of the throw.
When the stack receivers came out, I knew one was coming up, the other was coming over. It was clutch time. I knew we needed it, so I just went on and made the play.
And the Patriots have possession with 20 seconds to go in Super Bowl 49 with a 4-point lead over the Seahawks.
We got a good football team, and these guys fight you for 60 minutes. I'm so proud of all these players. I love these guys.
Stork snaps it to Freddie, who takes the knee. And the New England Patriots are on to a celebration. A 4th Lombardi Trophy is headed to one Patriot place.
I mean, we just won the Super Bowl. If we got critics now, I don't know what to say.
Pats Nation, baby! Woo!
You're going home to people who are just buried in snow, but you don't have a parade. Anything to say to them back there?
Dig out, because we're coming.
Our 10th anniversary today, this hour, brought to you by Safety Insurance, providing comprehensive coverage for your family and small business. Ask your independent agent about safety. I would just say that I was lucky enough to be with both Felger and Maz on the last flight that landed at Logan the morning after that Super Bowl before they closed the airport as Boston was, again, buried under snow. You stayed in Phoenix for how many days?
Two more because they got the team out, but then we had to stay with the team's family. But luckily enough, at that ranch resort, they kept us in that back area.
You and the wives.
Yeah.
Kicking back at the pool, sending pictures of his feet at the pool, all of that stuff.
And they said, order whatever you want.
Oh, okay. That's never been a problem for Zoe.
Just keep your bathing suit. So we kept our bathing suits, and I kept in contact with Jim to update him on the situation.
That's kind of you.
How about your family buried in 4 feet of snow?
Oh, yeah. I don't think you care too much about that.
I got many pictures from Zoe by the pool.
Honest to God, true story. I got back, I landed. I think, was it Jim? Two or three members had the flu in my house? And I was supposed to come directly to work. I couldn't because everybody's puking at home.
Oh, you must have felt really bad about that.
I did.
Yeah.
I felt bad. I was already gone for
a week. Tom had to take the hotel. I had to pick him up at the hotel that week because of blizzards.
Dig out.
Could think was, they warned us at the airport in Phoenix. They said, we got to board this flight. We got to get out because they're closing Boston and we want to try and get to Boston before they close it.
Oh.
And I'm like, I look at Maz and I go, we're going to get back. And he goes, we're not going to make it. Maz goes, we're not going to make it. And like he's, Maz being Maz. That's it. We're not going to make it. We're going to go somewhere else.
You guys are going to end up in
Maz was like convinced we're not making it back. They're already talking about closing Logan. We're 5+ hours from home.
Could you imagine
we're
not going to get there. If you guys
he's like, we're not
going to
get there. And I'm like, well, whatever. We're going to get on. We're going to go somewhere. We're going to end up closer to home getting on this plane.
Than we are now.
Right. So Maz and I left the game probably 10, 15 minutes after it was over. We rushed to the car, go straight to the airport. And Felger was on the same flight, and he had to do an hour postgame. And we're like, what are you doing? And we were just about to board the plane, and here comes Felger running through the terminal like OJ in the Hertz commercial.
Didn't he leave his rental car
ditched the rental car with the keys in the front seat at the front door of the airport.
Shut up.
Pulled up
on
to the
curb?
Yep. Pulled the rental car. You can ask him. Pulled the rental car up to the front of the front door of the airport, left the keys in the front seat, and said, not my problem.
You know what? That takes balls.
Called the rental car
people and said, hey, go pick up your car. It's at the door.
He's lucky.
He said he had to make that flight because that was the last one getting out, and we made it back to Boston, and I couldn't believe
it. He's lucky.
And we were the last one, and there was another flight that left.
They track your name.
There was another flight that left after us, shortly after us, and they sent them to Philly. and they got stuck in Philly for days. They were trying to take trains back and rental cars and brutal.
Imagine getting stuck.
We made
it
back. Yes, we did. We made it back. So the most exciting moment, though, for me was just being able to see you in your element, though. So that final call of the game.
Oh, and Warren Moon was literally 3 feet from me. Just basically,
we were in one booth. Sign. Seattle was in the next booth, and the only thing separating was a pane of glass. And when Butler made the pick, so starts slamming, banging on the glass.
Cutting my throat. Going.
Doing that, the head.
Freedom Rockets.
The head cut off.
Freedom Rockets. Cutting the head off. Banging on the glass. And they're looking at him
nuts.
Like,
you were going nuts.
Who is this animal?
Thomas was going nuts. Everybody was packed in our booth.
Nuts. And I don't know where we tracked this down. I don't remember how we tracked this down, but maybe I explain it in this clip because I did track down this exclusive audio of the, you know, stream of this audio stream of the call, and we played it on Felger Mass. So this is the clip from me debuting the audio on Felger Mass, right,
okay.
Jim?
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, let's hear it. Here's the exclusive audio. It comes from Sunday night's game. You will find it to be familiar because you will hear Scott Zolak in this piece of audio. It's Zoe isolated in the booth on the Malcolm Butler pick on Sunday night. Now, as part of this, you don't hear Bob Sosie's mic. You don't hear the crowd mic. You hear Zoe's mic. So you hear things a little bit better as to what the hell was going on.
Who was cacawing in the background?
I really do think the cacawing was coming from the crowd. I don't think that piece was in the booth. You do get an idea of some people yelling in the booth. You may or may not hear my voice on there. I'll leave that interpretation up to the listeners. You hear a lot of people in there. You may even hear Mass. There was a lot of yelling in the booth when this went down. But this is Zolak isolated, and you could pay close attention to the points where he's not talking.
It's a pass.
It's got it. He intercepted. Are you kidding me? No way! You've got to be kidding me! Oh! It's got to be one of the dumbest calls offensively in Super Bowl history. You are on the 1 yard line, and you have number 24, and you drop back pass. Are you kidding me? And also, they ran a pick play, an illegal pick. You deserve an interception.
So the cacawing was Zoe laughing, is what I think that was.
Yeah.
But, Beetle, you were back in there a little bit. I could pick up.
Yes! Where did that come from?
Oh, very
that's
good.
That's not from the
Let's
game.
Let's hear it again. Let's hear it again.
Right yes! 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 What is that from? Yeah,
that's like
from
Fred this Flintstone back there.
That's not from the game.
It's not.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't.
Good job, Jimmy.
That was from me making fun of something. I may have been in there yelling yes, though. I definitely
yes! Yes! Yes!
What was that for? I did that a couple of weeks ago.
I don't know.
Doing something. This was definitely an oh my god in there for me, though. I dropped an oh my god, and then a bunch of yeses did come later
on. It's a pass.
It's got it! He intercepted! Are you kidding me? No way! You've got to be kidding me!
Yes!
No, that's you! That's
hold
you!
On, hold on, hold on!
That's you! Jimmy, stop playing it. This is where you can hear it. Listen close. Listen closely.
Yes! Yes!
Now that's Jimmy. Stop it!
Good job, Jimmy.
Stop it, Jimmy!
Do your thing.
I did drop
kid.
The oh my god in the beginning, though.
It's good! He understood it! Are you kidding me? No way!
Yeah.
You've got to be
I can't even hear what I'm saying there, but I am screaming the whole time. I lost my mind.
Yes!
By the way,
Jimmy,
I don't know what Zoe's getting all hot and bothered about. They had him on the next play. It wasn't.
No, right.
What's the big deal?
Oh, no. It's a matter of time, Mike.
You were still going to stop him.
Totally.
I'm telling you. It's the Patriots now we're talking about.
An illegal
about.
Pick!
Wow.
Mike
Bevel.
Oh, my God.
In addition to the oh, my gods, you know, my other favorite part in there is Zoe's underrated but used throughout the year. Zoe going, oh.
You know what it was? You know what I went, oh? I watched the replay. That's me watching a replay. I'm like, I can't believe.
Oh.
They ran an isolation drop back to one side. It's a high score, Keith. Halo. What's it called? Halo? Halo. It's a good call. It's a good call. It's a good call if it works.
But credit to Zoe on this, and he's done it throughout the years, and he did it again in that clip. Whereas we goof on other color guys on Sounds of Sunday every single week for not telling you what happened. In the euphoria and the elation of that moment, the team sealing the Super Bowl victory, when you would be well within your rights to just lose your mind and not do anything, Zoe goes back to the call and isolates the no call on the pick play and explains what happened.
Which simultaneously yelling and banging on glass and giving the choke sign,
right,
the slashing of the throat,
right,
and the freedom rockets to Warren Moon while doing that.
Well, right. He was a jackass. Remember, you had him on a pregame?
The guy can multitask like you wouldn't believe, Hardy.
Yeah. Remember Moon was on a pregame?
I wish there were a video of that.
Moon was on a pregame, and he was pissed he had to wait for like a minute. What do you mean I'm coming back from break? You didn't come and get me when I was going on live? Like, who that for you?
And Warren Moon.
What do you got to do but go sit next door? Warren freaking Moon. God. He can throw, though.
Warren Moon, bro.
Yeah.
Warren Moon. All right. We are a minute away from the best of Radio Row. The best of Radio Row from the entire station, not just this show, all of the shows. And we are presented today commercial-free by Aaron's, the King of Snow, by your Aaron's Snow Thrower this upcoming tax-free weekend. So go nowhere, just a minute away, the best of Radio Row.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.